Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Okay, all righty. Oh. All righty. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. Thank you so much. We're having some great weather here, folks. One weather forecaster said that it feels like springtime, April, in the city of Chicago. I have to agree. It has been a balmy winter. It is warm. It is nice. It is great. However, on the East Coast and parts of the Southern Coast in the United States, they're getting some really bad weather. They're hit pretty bad on that side of the globe there. But here in Chicago, it is very nice. I mean, I'm appreciating it very much. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're back actually from a 3-day hiatus. We're on Monday through Thursday. We're off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, as you probably know, if you're paying attention to the show. And I want to say once again, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And it is, wow. I mean, during the weekend, folks, only thing I do actually is try to gear up for what's happening, to tell you what's happening around the world and in Chicago. It's never ending. The shootings, the killings, they seem to never ceased. Recently, very recently, two young girls, children, 11 and 12, I believe, were shot in the head. It's sad. And they're saying it was gang crossfire. They were shot in the head. They are now on life support, and their parents, guardians, they have some decisions to make, you know, And it is very, very sad. And I mean, I could point the finger at, you know, at the gangs, their parents, the thugs. I can point the fingers, my finger at the police. Why weren't they in the area patrolling? Where were they? But, you know, sometimes you get, I don't think I could ever be numb to all of this. You know, you can't just be numb to it. It bothers me. It hurts me. It tears me apart that children 14 and under have been mistakenly shot by gang members who can't shoot straight. They're shooting at each other, but they wind up hitting innocent children, 14 and under. And it's sad. It's heartbreaking. It brings tears to your eyes. And I'm not, you know, too much of an emotional person when it comes to certain things. But, you know, when things happen so often, so senselessly, so often, all the time, to these babies who've done nothing, because the police department can't get a, excuse me, folks, because the police department can't get control of the situation. It's just awful. It's sad. And it just seems never ending. How can the politicians live with themselves? You know, how can some of the community leaders out here live with themselves when they knowing that they're not protecting the people of these neighborhoods and of the communities? How do they live with themselves? You know, and, you know, it's sad that two young children, not teenagers, these are children. They, two females, young children in the hospital right now, as I speak, clinging to life on life support, you know, and as I mentioned, the families, they have a decision to make. And we all know what that decision is. And it's a heartbreaking one. It's totally heartbreaking. And as of now, the police officers are in a manhunt to find the killers of these, not the killers, I mean, I don't want to speak too fast, find the shooters of these two young girls. But if the parents take them off life support and they end up dying, then we can say killers. And, oh, wow, it is just so heartbreaking, the crime, the, as you know, I'm kind of somber. I'm kind of emotional about this because I'm, you know, I'm always loud and giggling and all that kind of thing. But this is just horrible. This is just, I don't know how Rahm Emanuel and the city leaders cannot place crime in the city of Chicago as a state of emergency. This is a state of emergency. They don't want to say it, or you can say it's a city of emergency. Well, however you want to say it, it is devastating. And they're talking about sending in FBI agents and all of this kind of thing. And, you know, I think they need the National Guard, but, you know, they're out there calling me nuts because I'm calling for the National Guard, but I'm just only trying to save lives. You know, so it's just heartbreaking. It's sad. And there is one other thing that's happening in Chicago. There's a 15-year-old girl, African-American girl, who has been abducted. She's been kidnapped. Yeah, 15. She's been kidnapped, abducted. And they're saying that she's in plenty of danger. And so the police, they're on that, among other things that they're following pertaining to crime in the city of Chicago. It's sad, folks. It is totally sad. And you feel for that 15-year-old girl because you feel if she's been abducted, that her abductors are probably doing some of the you know, things to her that is that are not right. You never know. She might wind up in being a part of sex trafficking, you know. So I don't want to go really go into that because, or she could wind up dead. You know, these guys are just hoodlums and thugs and, you know, and all right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We have to talk about these things, even if we don't want to, because it's a part of what's going on in the city of Chicago and elsewhere. And I'm just discovering Chicago does not have the highest murder rate in the city. I think there's two other cities who are, it could be Detroit. I'm not sure. I got to dig that up, but I'm pretty sure Chicago is not the highest, but you know, we don't want to be where we're at, period. You know? So it's just sad. two children tonight in the city of Chicago, they are clinging to life on child support, on life support. They're clinging to life on life support. And families, they have these decisions to make. And the decisions that they do not want to make. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in to the show. I'm always appreciative to those who are dedicated to the show, and I'm always appreciative to those who send positive feedback on the show. And that's always great. 347-857-1762 WTTTY in the city of Chicago. It is 6:11 straight up Chicago time. Oh man, I almost forgot. My guest is author John McGrail, and we're gonna have plenty of commentary on the show. We're gonna talk about everything that's in the news. Well, we're gonna pay it a little bit of lip service. We're gonna, you know, talk about it as much as we can because we only got about an hour and a half in the show. I want to take it longer, but we're just gonna have to see how it goes. All right, author John McGrail and commentary on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Be right back. Ashley Judd, is he here? Can't be. All right. Alrighty, like I've said, folks, heavy snow and high winds we're having weather-wise over east. And Chicago is mild. I mean, it feels good weather-wise. I mean, it's great. I mean, you can walk to the park or, you know, if you've been in the house all day, if you're retired, you've been in the house all day, get out there and enjoy this weather. It's great. It's beautiful. And they're talking about 60s. Yeah, by the weekend, I believe. 60 degree weather in the city of Chicago in the middle of winter. Wow. a lot of the meteorologists, they want snow. Oh, we're not getting snow. We need snow. We should have some snow. We don't need no snow. You know, from my point of view, this is beautiful. I don't need to be going out here shoveling 12 foot of snow. I don't need that. I'm pretty sure you don't need it. The weather people always, we need snow. We need rain. We need some snow. We need rain. We don't need snow. If you guys and girls want snow, then go where there is snow. But do not be wishing snow upon the rest of the city of Chicago. There you go. There you go. All righty. We're going to move right along. Okay. Dam breaks in California. 200,000 people evacuated. That's something. And, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another, folks, in the world. That's why the George Wilder Jr. Show is here to help and try to make the world a better place. And despite all the negativity and all the garbage that's going around, I believe the world is a better place. It's just that we have to dig down inside of ourselves and find it. Because making the world a better place involves you and me. Like that Michael Jackson song, Man in the Mirror. If you want to start to make the world a better place, look at yourself and make that change. Those lyrics are truer than anything I've ever heard when it comes to bettering yourself and making the world a better place for you and for me. You know, if something's out of whack, if you think some things that need to be changed, some things that are not right, some things you have to fight for, then do it. Do it. Do not sit around and let other people fight your battles for you. If there's something you don't like going on in your country, going on in your government, make your voices known, make your presence known. Because that's the only way you're going to fight back, get things to be better, or eliminate them altogether. You have the power. We have people power. You know, we have the power purse. We have the power of just mobilizing, rallying, protesting. If you don't like something, do something about it, period. Get up off your ass and get out there with the rest of us and start making a difference. Because if you don't, these people are going to run amok. They're going to run amok over you, over me, over everybody there is to run amok over, and they're going to try and justify it with lies. You have to do something, folks. You can't sit around, you know, eating pizza, drinking pop, and, you know, playing video games or goofing off on the phone. You got to get out here and do something to take your country back. Because obviously I'm talking about the Trump administration. There's no doubt about that. I mean, this guy is appointing people to some of these cabinet posts, people who are millionaires, billionaires, to some of these vital agencies throughout America, and they are just going to tear that shit up. That's all they're going to do, is destroy those programs, is destroy that agency for people. And I've said this 1,000 times on this show. If you are a working person, if you have a job, a family, a house, a car, and you struggle to pay your bills, these people in Washington are not for you. They are going to try to screw you in every way they can, because they are rich and they are all about the rich. We have rich people right now running this country. They don't know. Majority of the people that has been confirmed, some of these, and there's still more confirmations to do, but the majority of the folks that have been confirmed for these cabinet posts throughout Trump's administration, these people don't have no experience. They can't even spell. They lie. They cheat. They spin, and they think that we are dumb enough to take this. Remember, folks, Trump only won the presidency by 302 votes. 302 votes. Hillary gotten over 3 million votes. 302. It was the electoral vote, okay? But still, in all, it was 302 votes in my view. Okay? He did not win the popular vote. You know, if the popular vote was what you were supposed to deal with, which I think we were, she would have been president. She would have been president. And Donald Trump is saying that 3 million illegal aliens voted. That's why he didn't get the popular vote. The guy is whacked. The guy is whacked. And no matter how much you say, show us some evidence, they don't show any evidence. And they don't care. They don't care. Donald Trump is here to stay, folks. I mean, he is here to stay. And the only thing that we can do, myself as a public speaker, going out over the airwaves all over the world, we must mobilize and keep mobilizing. These people are in the White House. This administration is here to stay for 4 years. If Donald Trump does 4 years, I don't know, but you know, he has a 4-year contract to be president, and he can also decide if he want to go for a second term, which is, you know, getting ahead of myself, hopefully. And it's just awful. It's just awful. And right now, there are some Democrat out here who's saying that we can actually look at Trump's taxes. We can look at his taxes right now. There's a little bitty law from 1924 that has been used twice. You know. And the last time it was used in 24, last time that it was used, from my understanding, was 2014 to look at someone's taxes. But now they're saying, some of these people are saying, let me see if we can find it. Okay. Okay. They're saying that some committee is saying that they are not going to pursue Trump's taxes. They're not going to do it. Of course, they're not going to do it because they want Trump. They're not going to look at his taxes. They're not going to. In other words, folks, this committee, U.S. House Tax Committee, will not seek Trump's tax returns. They're not going to look at them. They're not going to even bother them. Even though there's probably things on his tax returns that saying that he has broken the law and that he should be impeached, but they're not going to look at it. You know why? The U.S. House Tax Committee is made up of Republicans, and they like what he's doing. And they probably don't like being forced to do anything by the people. So therefore, they're not going to look at this, but we're going to find another way to seek his tax returns. Remember, it doesn't matter what Trump does, because Trump is surrounded and protected by other Republicans. You know, I mean, the guy is unfit to be in office, and he's being protected by other Republicans around him. Why? Because we want him out. We want them out. And I want to say these people, these politicians that are on this committee, they should be voted out. They should be voted out on their asses because they're not doing their jobs. They have the right to look at Donald Trump's taxes and make them public, but they are saying that they will not do it. And I say, if any of these people on this House, U.S. House Tax Committee is your representative, 2018, vote their asses out for not doing their jobs. It's their jobs to investigate. It's their jobs to investigate corruption within the government. And these assholes saying that they're not going to do it. And I say, vote them out. And I say, stand up and vote their asses out. When they come home for a town hall meeting, you give it to them. You know, as you've been giving it to them so far in some of these town hall meetings I've been hearing about. That's great. And you know what these Republicans are saying at these town hall meetings? They're saying that the crowds who are bitching and arguing and shouting at them they are paid Democrats coming in to disrupt their town hall. That's a lie. That's an excuse that they're giving to not move on anything. That's an excuse. That's the people who are upset at some of these Republicans at some of these town hall meetings. They are their constituents. These are the people who voted for these clowns. Now, I actually believe come 2018, the midterm elections, I actually believe a lot of these people are going to be voted out onto the curve. That's the bottom line. Vote their asses out onto the curb because they're not doing your jobs. They're not doing what you want them to do. They're not doing what I want them to do. You can flood their offices with calls, but still, these people care about one thing. They don't care about you. They care about one thing, their party. It's the party, not the people of America, not the people who voted for them. It's Congress and its party. They are doing what their party wants them to do, not what you or I or the people who voted their asses in office. They are doing what basically they want to do. Their asses out in 2018 to the curve. Let them know how it feels to be unemployed. Apparently they don't. Let them know how it feels not to have a job. The jobs that they're taking away from people, grassroots people out here on the ground. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I keep harping back to this U.S. Tax Committee, and they will not. We've been wanting to see Donald Trump's tax returns for a long time. And now that they have a chance to look at them and make them public, these people are saying they will not do it. This is what the public wants. The public, majority of the public, Democrat or Republican, wants to see these tax returns. But now this committee, this 2-cent committee, will not investigate the tax returns, even though an overwhelming majority of the American people want to see his returns, want to know what's there, but they're not going to do it. So as I've just got through saying, folks, vote these damn people out on their asses. You know, sorry for my words here, but this is ridiculous. I'm just learning this today. Just learning it today, folks. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And another thing, Democrats are going to have to start fighting back. We just have a few people. I'm an independent, okay? So, but there are just a few people in Washington who are fighting back. You got Bernie Sanders, you got Elizabeth Warren, you got a few more, but you don't have the whole kick and caboodle of them out there. I mean, where's Obama? I mean, why isn't he saying something? Why would he want to sit back and watch this administration destroy everything that he's built? Because that's what they're doing. Everything that Obama has done, they are undoing it, and they're undoing it with glee. And I don't understand it, why Obama is not saying something, not speaking up. Hillary has said a few things, but Obama has not said. I think if Obama wanted to, or if he wasn't so much afraid, I think he could just galvanize the entire country to stand up and fight against this rogue administration. But he's not doing anything. He's out there playing golf with billionaires. And, you know, he could be Louis Farrakhan said that Obama was a terrible president, but he could be a great, great ex-president. I think so, too. But he's not making himself known. He's not making himself heard. He's just letting all of this just go down in front of him. You know, but I've said for a long time, even in Obama's first term, that he was a coward. He was a coward. Maybe he's hiding behind his wife's dress. But I've always known that even some of the Republicans in Congress said the same thing, that Obama was a coward. They backed up. They backed off of it. But I saw it immediately. And I think he is a coward for not coming out and saying something about about where this country is now heading. It's heading down the tube. We've lost our standing in the world because of this. Because of this. All of these appointments that have been confirmed for some of these cabinet posts, these are all millionaires and billionaires. Donald Trump said he was going to fight Wall Street, but that's all he's hired was people of Wall Street. And it's bad. It's not correct. It's bad. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and we have to do something about that, folks. And I think we will. I think we're going to fight. We're all going to have to do this. We can't let our country just go down the goddamn tubes because a few people won't say anything. Okay. All right. So we don't have Obama. We have Elizabeth Warren, although we have Bernie Sanders. We have a few other people in high places. And you have me. I'm going to try to do what I can. But remember, folks, I am not a Republican. I am not a Democrat. I'm an independent. I'm just like Bernie Sanders. And I love it the way Bernie Sanders just gets right to it and just called Donald Trump a fraud. He has called Donald Trump a pathological liar. And I think he's still doing that as I do this show today. Elizabeth Warren. These two are true progressives, even though one is a Democrat and one is an independent. But where is Obama? Why isn't he out here? Why isn't he saying something, making his voice heard, making his displeasure known? Because I'm pretty sure there is some. Maybe. I'm not sure because I can't really, you know, pinpoint it because he hasn't said anything so far. But it's not a good thing, folks. It's not a good thing. We're going to do this. And we will be right back.
The George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times, is now on the air. Welcome, everybody.
Start straight with General Flynn. If General Flynn was lying those times when he said that sanctions did not come up, that he did speak to the Russian ambassador about sanctions before taking office, should the president fire him?
Well, this is a very troubling development, and it speaks to the broader issue of Russia's involvement in our elections. It speaks to the issue of President Trump being buddy-buddy with a thug and a murderer. Who is the head of Russia. And now we're learning that may have been discussions between Flynn and the Russians about sanctions before this administration took power. So this is very, very troubling, and I think the president is going to have to tell us what he's going to do about it.
So far he hasn't said much, Senator. I don't know if you've heard. Here's what he has said. You know, he was asked about this report about Flynn on his flight to Mar-a-Lago late today, right? He just landed about an hour or so ago, and here's how he responded.
I don't know about it. I haven't seen it. What report is that?
The Washington Post is reporting that he talked to the ambassador to Russia before you were inaugurated about sanctions, maybe trying to...
I haven't seen that. I'll look at that.
He says he knows nothing about it, hasn't seen any of these reports. Is that a problem?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he was watching CNN fake news. What do you think?
You don't buy
it. That was
a joke. I know it was a joke. I'm saying you don't buy what he said, obviously. We are back. Senator Sanders is back with me, and I want to apologize to our viewers, obviously, for that technical issue. And Senator, you had just been joking about, you know, CNN fake news, but obviously the reports about General
Well, here
Flynn...
is the point. Here
okay,
is the
ahead.
Point, Darren, yeah. that it's not a joke. And I can tell you that here in Vermont and all over this country, there is a real concern about what's happening in this country over the last month. When you have a president who attacks people in the media who make critical remarks of them, which is what their job is, as providing fake news, when you have a president who attacks a judge who rules against him as a so-called judge, indicting the entire judiciary, clearly we have a president who does not understand what our Constitution is about, what democracy is about. And I think there is a fear in this country of this nation under Trump moving into a more authoritarian mode. Second of all, what I hear in Vermont and around this country is people see this president as a total hypocrite, somebody who campaigned before the American people saying, I'm a different type of Republican. I'm not going to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And then he appoints people to those important positions whose whole life work has been about cutting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. He says, I'm going to take on Wall Street. And then he appoints the head of Goldman Sachs, one of the largest financial institutions in the country, as his right-hand guy, and surrounds himself with billionaires. So I think there is growing consternation in this country. And what you are seeing is people beginning to stand up and fight back. You're seeing at Republican town meetings in Utah,
yep.
elsewhere.
Yep.
Hundreds and hundreds of people coming out. And I do want to tell you that on February 25th, 2 weeks from tomorrow, there will be rallies all over this country where Democrats, Republicans, independents are going to go out to Republican offices, congressional yep. offices, and say, you know what? You're not going to throw 20 million people off of health insurance, and you're not going to do away with pre-existing conditions. So I think you're seeing the American people standing up to Trump and fighting back.
There's a lot of things I want to ask you about, but because you bring up those town halls, I want to ask you that now. There's been a lot of anger and protests at these Republican town halls, right? This is all about Obamacare, as you point out. You're talking about another day of action. You had one back in January that you were the leader of. Do you think these protests are going to have any impact, though, on Republicans who will, of course, control this? Repeal and replace.
Do I think? I think it has already had a huge impact. You remember, it was just a month or two ago, Republicans said, we're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act. We're going to throw millions off of health insurance. We're going to raise prescription drug costs for seniors. We're going to do away with pre-existing conditions. We're going to do all of that. Repeal, repeal, repeal. Guess what? You're not hearing that so much anymore. And I think when hundreds of thousands of people come out and actually confront Republicans, and say, look, you don't like the Affordable Care Act? Fine. We know it has problems. What are your ideas to improve it? How are you going to drive down deductibles? How are you going to provide health insurance for the 28 million people who don't have it? Are you going to make sure that people who have pre-existing conditions still are going to be able to get insurance at a rate that they can afford? Are you going to throw young people off their parents' insurance? Are you going to raise prescription drug costs by $2,000 for senior citizens? Those are the questions Republicans are going to hear. And you know what? I don't think you're going to see them going forward with the repeal of the ACA.
So what do you think they're going to do? I mean, they're not going to let it stay as it is.
No, they're not. But I think they're going to have to address the fact that we need to make it better, not just throw it out. People are saying you're crazy. You just can't throw out something without replacing it with something that is good or better. But I think that is the message that the Republicans are getting, and they are hearing it very clearly.
It's interesting that you have all of this action around Obamacare right now and a lot of protests about that, but also a lot of questions about where the Democratic Party is going. Obviously, you're an independent, but this is an issue that is near and dear to Democrats' hearts. We are hearing now, sources just tonight telling us, and I don't think you've heard this, that during a meeting with senators at the White House, President Trump said that Elizabeth Warren is now the face of the Democratic Party, but that's not how he said it. The way he said it is Pocahontas is now the face of your party. What's your reaction to that?
Well, again, I mean, it's, what can you say? I keep saying it's unbelievable. I mean, he's using incredibly insulting words. Elizabeth Warren, to my view, is one of the outstanding members of the United States Senate. I understand why Trump may not like her, because she has stood up for to Wall Street and stood up to the billionaire class. So I think that, in fact, in my view, we need basic transformation of the Democratic Party to make it a party of working people, to make it a party that is very clear. We are going to stand up to Wall Street. We're going to stand up to the drug companies and the insurance companies. And we are going to bring about the kinds of changes that this country needs to protect the middle class and working families.
Why do you think, though, that he always attacks her, right? He's not attacking you. Why is he attacking her? Is it because she's a woman, or why? Why?
You know what, Aaron? I really, trying to understand the way this president functions is something that I can't quite figure out myself, and I'm not sure that many people can.
It does bring me, though, to a serious issue, though, of course, which is mental health, right? In recent days, several Democrats have questioned his mental health. Nancy Pelosi said he should get a mental health check. She suggested that. You yourself have used the word delusional to describe him. Look, I know how you feel about him, but do you think that this talk is disrespectful of the office of the president?
You know, that is a fair question. And if you know my personal record, you know I am maybe the most progressive member of the United States Congress. But that doesn't allow me, and I never have, just attack people because their views are different than mine. You got a lot of Republicans out there, conservative, they're decent, honest people. I disagree with them. I use the term delusional in Trump with regard to Trump when he said there were 3 to 5 million illegals who voted in the last election. Aaron, that is delusional. Nobody in the world believes that is the case. There is zero evidence to back it up. But he makes that statement. So I think the word delusional is correct. I have used the word pathological liar to describe Donald Trump. Those are very harsh terms. I don't feel good about it. I disagreed with George Bush all the time. Never called him a pathological liar because he was not, just a conservative president. But this guy lies all of the time. So we are in kind of a new era. And I know the media is figuring out how it could deal with it. Democrats are figuring out how we could deal with it. And by the way, you got some Republicans who are not all that enthusiastic about the way that this president is behaving. But bottom line here is I think the American people, working people, middle class people, are understanding that this guy is not delivering what he promised. How can you go around saying you will not cut Social Security and then you appoint to be head of HHS a guy whose whole life's work has been about cutting Medicare, cutting Social Security? The hypocrisy is unbelievable.
Right. Although he hasn't done it yet, and he has, I mean, one could argue he's keeping absolutely all of his campaign promises, right, Senator, including the travel ban, which I want to get your new view on the breaking news tonight, because he's now saying he may issue a new executive order. He says this is about security. He doesn't have the time to fight through the courts, possibly, with the one that was, of course, the issue with the Ninth Circuit Court last night. We asked him tonight on the plane to Mar-a-Lago what would be in the new executive order, and here's exactly how he answered that question.
We're going to have very, very strong vetting. I call it extreme vetting, and we're going to have very strong security in our country. We are going to have people come into our country that want to be here for good reasons.
Is there an executive order on this issue, Senator, that you could get behind? Because we all know there are major security risks. There are people outside the United States who do want to come here to do Americans harm. Is there an executive order on this front that he could rework that you could support?
Look, Aaron, what the president just said is what everybody agrees with. Who wants to create a situation where people are going to come into this country to do us harm? There already is very, very strong vetting. If the president has an idea how you make that vetting even stronger and may keep us safer, that's fine. Who disagrees with that? But this is what I will tell you, and it's not just me. These are national security experts who say that Trump's words and his deeds are making us less safe because he is feeding ammunition to the jihadists to the people who hate America. And he's going out and all over the world. You know, the jihadists are telling young people, see that? They really do hate us. That's what we've been telling you all along. They are anti-Muslim. Stand up. Fight Americans. So I think, and I think many national security experts would agree with me, that we are becoming less safe because of this anti-Muslim rhetoric and actions.
All right, Senator Sanders, thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you.
All right, I hope you heard. Okay, thanks. I hope you heard that clearly. Sometimes I have to, may have to turn up your volume a little bit to hear some of these, some of this stuff, because still working on the audio and sounds and adjustments here. So that was Bernie Sanders. I mean, Bernie Sanders is out there mobilizing people, telling the truth on this guy in the White House. He's telling the truth. Where is Obama? Why isn't Obama saying something? You know, I mean, Obama can, if Obama would say something, come out of hiding or hibernation or whatever, and get out here and start mobilizing and galvanizing people against this administration, it would mean so much. But now we got Bernie Sanders who's doing it. But you know what? Hey, I'm all for Bernie Sanders. I'm all with Bernie Sanders. I agree with Bernie Sanders, but it would seem more appropriate for Obama to say something. He has not said anything. He's too busy. He's rich. He's got two beautiful daughters. He's got a beautiful wife. I mean, he's got money. I mean, he's done his 8 years and that's it, you know? And one of the things I hate about Obama, he left us with Trump. He left us with people who are going to actually destroy, take away your happiness. Like Meryl Streep said, these people are going to be taking away your happiness. That's what they're about. And as I've said before, if you're not rich, they're not for you. If you're working every day to pay your bills, take care of your family, send your kids to college, you know, pay your car note, whatever, your insurance bills, your mortgages, these people are not for you. And they are definitely not for those people who are poor or semi-poor or underemployed. It's not going to happen for you, not with this administration. They are all about the rich. As I've said earlier in the show, it's the rich that's running this country. But it's working people who are going to galvanize and run these scoundrels out of town. They're going to run amok, people, and they are running amok as I speak. Donald Trump is a pathological liar, just like Bernie Sanders just got through saying. This guy has gone back on he always claims that I'm doing it. This is my campaign promise. He's not doing his campaign promises. He's going against them by appointing all of these people, these billionaires, to these agencies that they are going to strip apart. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, you name it. Food stamps. These are all going away because majority of these people who are billionaires and are being confirmed to these posts made their money off of working people. They've gotten rich off of poor people. This is how they get rich. They've gotten rich off of poor people, working people. And now they are given these posts, these positions in government where they are now going to destroy it all. This case in point, Betty DeVos. She doesn't know crap about education. Nothing whatsoever. She's like Donald Trump. She may be learning on the job, but other than that, she knows nothing about it. Yet she's the Secretary of Education, the Department of Education. She's, from my understanding, she's going to tear it down and build it all over again. Teachers are quaking in their shoes because they know something is up. I've got a letter the other day from my kid's school where the budget cuts were just going to, they're just going to be devastating. Teachers are going to be laid off. Program cuts, no after school programs, no gym, no music, no nothing. Because the Republicans are refusing to give up the money for these that these schools need to survive on. And now we got Betty DeVos. And she's going to double down on what they're doing, because my understanding is that she's in favor of charter schools. And most Republicans are in favor of charter schools. Why do you think Republicans are always in favor of charter schools? My theory is because charter schools, the majority of them, have no union representation. And Republicans, they can't stand unions. They think unions are screwing the people. But the people, the workers who are part of some of these unions, they want to stay in these unions. They don't want Republicans to take away workmen's compensation without replacing it with anything. I don't think that, you're talking about replacing, I don't think the Republicans are going to replace the American Care Act. And I'm going to stop calling it Obamacare, because until I start hearing from Obama. Obama is not even out there to try and save his signature legacy, this landmark. He's not out there to even try to save it. They're going to yank it out from under all of these people, and he's not out there talking about saving it. He doesn't care. Okay, I know a lot of you people out here love Obama, but the guy doesn't give a damn. Where is Obama? I'm not the only one asking that question. We are in turmoil. Things are about to get worse. They didn't get worse so far. I mean, Trump has done a lot of damage around the country so far, but there's about to be more done. There's more that he's going to do, his administration is going to do, his goons are going to do. Some people saying that we're going to get into another World War III. It could happen. It could happen, and it just might happen. But my thing is, where the hell is Obama? Why isn't he talking up a good game? If anybody can give me a reason or have an idea of why this guy isn't out here mobilizing or being mobilized. Hey, he was a community activist. My thing is, Obama got rich. He's a rich man now. He's hanging out with the millionaires. He doesn't give a damn. This is what I'm thinking. Because if he did care how he left America, he would be out here in droves. He would be out here mobilizing, galvanizing. He would be another Malcolm X. He could be another Martin Luther King. He could be another great world leader. You know, and they are talking about right now making his birthday a holiday. That's crazy. For what? He hasn't done a damn thing. Everything that he's done, the Republicans are rolling back. He has no legacy. He has nothing. The only thing that he's got is he's rich and he's going to get richer. The last thing I heard on Obama that he was signing a book deal. Probably, I'm pretty sure, $1 million book deal. Millions of dollars book deal. And he's going to make $1 million just going around giving speeches and talks to universities and so on and so forth. So can his wife. But the American people need a leader, and Obama is that, but he refuses. He's a great speaker, but that's about it. In my book, that's about all it is. He can galvanize you with the way he speaks and the way he talks. Maybe he's pissed off that a lot of people didn't vote for his candidate. They didn't vote for Hillary Clinton because of Obama. Obama disappointed them. A lot of people felt. So they didn't want a third term Obama with Hillary Clinton, with a Hillary Clinton candidacy. That's what happened. You know, and that's one of the things that happened. Other things that happened is that the Russians played a part in Trump's election. The FBI played a part in Trump's election, and conning and lying to the American public played a part in his election. So is he unfit for office? Is he an illegitimate president? I think so. 347-857-1762. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And folks, I am out here saying, where is Obama? Where is Obama? Why isn't he out there? Why isn't he out here with the people who are fighting and standing up and resisting this administration? This is what he left us with. This is what he left us with. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We'll be right back. Take a musical break.
It was important for him to be briefed because the plan was to brief the president-elect as well, that these allegations had been circulating.
Pamela, hang on. We're going to go to Chicago, listen to the Attorney General Loretta Lynch talking about the civil rights investigation into the Chicago Police Department.
With me because they are the indispensable members of the team that led to this announcement today. Now, one of my highest priorities as Attorney General has been to ensure that every American enjoys police protection that is lawful, that is responsive and transparent. But as the events of recent years in Ferguson, in Baltimore, Cleveland, and many other cities have made clear, far too many Americans feel that they do not receive that kind of law enforcement. And far too many communities suffer because of painful divisions between police officers and citizens, divisions that make it significantly harder to reduce crime, to expand opportunity, and to ensure that every American, including our police officers, can be safe and secure in their neighborhoods. Now, in December of 2015, as part of that work, I announced that the Department of Justice, after careful review and extensive consultation with state and local officials and community leaders, was opening an investigation into whether the Chicago Police Department had engaged in a pattern or practice of violations of the Constitution or federal statutory law. And for the past 13 months, our investigators have worked tirelessly to obtain a full and an accurate and an impartial picture of policing in Chicago. They have conducted hundreds of interviews with citizens, with officials, with officers. They have reviewed thousands of pages of documents. They have observed Chicago Police Department officers on the job. And on the basis of this exhaustive review, the Department of Justice has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. Our investigation found that this pattern or practice is in no small part the result of severely deficient training procedures and accountability systems. Now, as my colleagues will explain in greater detail, CPD does not give its officers the training they need to do their jobs safely, effectively, and lawfully. It fails to properly collect and analyze data, including data on misconduct complaints and training deficiencies, and it does not adequately review use of force incidents to determine whether force was appropriate or lawful, or whether the use of force could have been avoided altogether. All of these issues are compounded by poor supervision and oversight, leading to low officer morale and an erosion in officer accountability. These are serious problems, and they bear serious consequences for all Chicagoans. As I said when I announced this investigation, the systems and policies that fail ordinary citizens also fail the vast majority of Chicago Police Department officers who risk their lives every day to serve and protect the people of Chicago. And during the course of our investigation, the department heard from countless officers who were themselves disillusioned and discouraged by strained trust, by inadequate training, poor oversight, and inattention to officer wellness and safety. Now, those officers are proud to wear the badge, but they recognize that they lack the support, both from the community and from the city, to properly do their jobs. And they understand that repairing trust with the communities that they serve will require difficult and meaningful reforms. Now, to Chicago's credit, the city has not been standing still since we announced our investigation at the end of 2015. Under the leadership of Mayor Emanuel and Superintendent Johnson, Chicago Police Department has taken a number of encouraging steps to improve oversight and to encourage community-oriented policing. But our report makes clear that there is still considerable work to be done, work that will require federal partnership and independent oversight. And that is why I am pleased to announce today that the Department of Justice and the City of Chicago have agreed to begin negotiations on an independently monitored, court-enforceable consent decree. And in the days ahead, we will continue speaking to local residents, local authorities, to officers, to ordinary citizens, to gather their perspectives about the challenges facing this city and the changes needed to address them. Now, of course, this announcement comes at a critical juncture for this proud city. Chicago is grappling with a deeply troubling rise in violent crime, one that has already claimed far too many lives. Now, fighting violent crime has long been a priority for the Justice Department as well. And we at the Justice Department have brought our full resources to bear on this issue, from the FBI, ATF, U.S. Marshals Service, and the DEA, who've participated in joint task forces to combat violence, to the Department's Violence Reduction Network. Now, our efforts to work closely with local authorities to fight violence in a number of ways began long before we opened this investigation, and they will continue during and after this investigation. And no one understands that better than Zach Farden. Under his outstanding leadership, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Illinois has worked literally around the clock to tackle gun violence, gang cases, and other serious crimes afflicting this great city. And at the same time that Zach's office actively partnered with our Civil Rights Division on this pattern and practice investigation, the prosecutors in his office in 2016 charged the highest number of illegal firearm cases in any year since 2004. So the U.S. Attorney's Office here and federal investigative agencies have truly ramped up their efforts to help stem the recent rise in violence. But as I have seen firsthand from my community policing tour, that work is undermined if the community does not trust law enforcement. And that's why, in addition to increasing intelligence efforts and enhancing crime-fighting operations, we're also working with the city on a range of other critical initiatives, from youth outreach to counseling for the victims of crime. And these efforts will continue, and they will only be strengthened by the reforms that we are announcing today. because successfully reducing and preventing violent crime requires a collaborative and trusting relationship between officers and residents. And where that relationship is broken, as it is in far too many of Chicago's neighborhoods, it's much harder to solve crimes and reduce violence. By making the changes necessary to bring constitutional, community-oriented policing to Chicago, the city and the police department will place itself in a much stronger position to combat the scourge of violence. And finally, I want to commend the people of Chicago for their patience and for their resilience throughout this long process. Community police relations is an especially difficult issue. It taps into long histories, deep beliefs, and strong opinions, and there's no lack of strong opinions here in Chicago. But it also forces us to honestly acknowledge the ways in which our society has fallen short in extending the protection of our laws to all Americans. It does not yield to swift or simple solutions. But meaningful change is never easy. The task of realizing the promise of our country has always been hard. And here in Chicago, thanks to the determination and the commitment of countless public officials, police officers, advocates, and citizens, we've taken the first step towards meaningful change and a brighter future. The people of this city have recognized that there is work to be done, and they've committed themselves to seeing that work through to the end. And the Department of Justice will stand beside you along the way. And I'm confident that when we are finished, when this review is finished and the changes are set in place, Chicago will be a stronger, a safer, and a more united city for everyone who calls it home. And at this time, I'll turn things over to Vinita Gupta, the head of the Civil Rights Division, who will say more about our findings. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, Attorney General Lynch, and thank you also to U.S. Attorney Zach Farden. I am deeply grateful for the extraordinary work of the DOJ team, of the Civil Rights Division, and the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago that has worked tirelessly over the past 13 months. I also want to thank Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Superintendent Eddie Johnson for their cooperation during this investigation and for their commitment to reform. And I want to thank the people of Chicago, including the city's police officers, for engaging with the Justice Department over the last many months because you care about your city so much. Since we launched this investigation in December of 2015, the Justice Department has deployed our largest team ever in a policing pattern or practice case to conduct a thorough and fair investigation of the Chicago Police Department and Independent Police Review Authority. We reviewed thousands of documents and hundreds of force reports. We met with community members, city officials, and each of the police unions. We visited each of Chicago's 22 police districts, went on 60 ride-alongs, spoke to 340 members of the CPD, from command staff to line officers. We also met with over 90 community organizations and heard from more than 1,000 Chicagoans. And 11 independent subject matter experts, most of them current or former law enforcement officials, assisted with this investigation. As the Attorney General said, we found that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of using excessive force, including deadly force and non-deadly force. This pattern includes, for example, shooting at people who present no immediate threat and tasing people for not following verbal commands. This conduct doesn't only harm residents, it endangers officers. It results in avoidable deaths and injuries and trauma. And it erodes police community trust, trust that truly is the cornerstone of public safety. We found that this pattern of unconstitutional force is largely attributable to systemic deficiencies within the CPD and the city. We found that CPD does not adequately train its officers to use the appropriate amount of force. For example, we observed training on deadly force that used a video made decades ago with guidance inconsistent with both current law and internal policy. We found that CPD officers do not fully report their uses of force and that supervisors are not appropriately reviewing these uses of force. We found that Chicago's accountability systems are broken. Many complaints that should be investigated are not. And when investigations do occur, they are glacially slow and staffed by overworked and undertrained investigators who often fail to obtain basic witness statements and evidence. Officers are too rarely held accountable for misconduct, and when they are, discipline is unpredictable and ineffective. We found that CPD's approach to data collection on the use of force prevents CPD from spotting dangerous trends, responding with remedial training, and sharing information that would be useful to the public. We found that CPD's promotion systems are not transparent. And we found that CPD is failing to provide officers with the support that they need to deal with the stress and trauma of their jobs. We make these findings acutely aware that this is a time of significant challenge for Chicago residents and police officers. Gun violence has spiked, relations between police officers and residents is strained, and officer morale is suffering. But really, this context only heightens the importance and urgency of our findings. The failures that we identified and that we heard about from residents and officers alike have deeply eroded community trust, particularly in African American and Latino communities suffering the most from gun violence on Chicago's South and West Sides. These neighborhoods are the hardest hit by CPD's pattern of unlawful force and breakdown in the city's accountability systems. These breakdowns breed distrust and undermine police legitimacy in the very communities that need fair, proactive policing the most. Distrust of law enforcement makes residents unwilling to share information, and that makes it harder for officers to solve and prevent crimes. Addressing the deeply rooted police community distrust is a critical part of fighting crime and reducing violence in Chicago. Chicago's leaders, including especially the mayor and superintendent, of course, are aware of many of these problems, and to their credit, have been working to address them, such as revamping IPRA, bringing officers new de-escalation training, rolling out body cameras, and adopting a new policy on the release of videos, just among some.
Right, you've been watching a news conference from Chicago where the U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch announced the results of a 13-month investigation into the Chicago Police Department, and they found that the Chicago Police Department had a pattern of excessive force, exhibited a pattern of excessive force, and importantly, the Chicago Police Department has agreed, the City of Chicago, to enter a consent decree with the Justice Department to work on policing in that city going forward. It was also noted right there that the minority community in Chicago has been disproportionately hit by this use of excessive force. This all stemmed from the release of a video more than a year ago of Laquan McDonald being shot and killed by a police officer. I want to bring in Paul Callen, CNN legal analyst. And Paul, this was an interesting news conference right there. This was a 13-month civil rights investigation. They did find a pattern of excessive force. They did announce a consent decree. Explain to me what this all means.
The Justice Department has conducted a number of these evaluations of cities across the United States. They did it in Newark, New Jersey, for instance, where there were repeated complaints of excessive force by police departments. And what they do is they come in and they give recommendations as to how to improve policing, and maybe there'll be increased funding that will be found for the Chicago police, hopefully, as a result of this. But I have to say, John, I find it to be very, very unusual to hear this in Chicago at this time, because Chicago has one of the most brutal homicide rates in America, over 750 killings, I think, this year so far. Last year, I think there were 3,500 shootings in the mostly minority neighborhoods of Chicago. So a lot of people are saying that policing is not aggressive enough in Chicago. And I think that there will be many who will look at this report and say this is going to force the police to back off even more from aggressively policing the dangerous neighborhoods out of fear that they'll face federal sanctions of some kind if they're aggressive in policing.
Let me just tell you what was said about this, because Loretta Lynch addressed that. First of all, she said the excessive force stemmed from deficient training and poor supervision, and she did note the rising number of homicides in Chicago, the plague of homicides in that city over the last year or two that has been on the rise, though not to record levels, but has certainly been on the rise in a very alarming way. She says the pattern of excessive force has eroded trust in minority communities and has prevented people from coming forward with information that may help in investigations, may prevent more murders. So what they seem to be trying to do, Paul, was say that maybe all these things are tied up into one little package.
Yes, and I think all of those points are quite legitimate. Having been a homicide prosecutor myself, I know that cooperation from the community in making cases against the bad guys is critical. And if you don't have the trust of the police and law enforcement officials, you cannot solve crime problems. But of course, on the other hand, you need a cooperative police force that's willing to go out and put their lives on the line to fight the bad guys. So it's a really delicate balance, not to scare the police out of aggressive policing, but on the other hand, to make sure that they honor and respect the legitimate law-abiding citizens in these neighborhoods. And hopefully, the Department of Justice will find a way to achieve these two competing goals.
It is a difficult challenge, to say the least. Paul Callen, thanks so much for being with us.
Okay. Thank you, John.
All right.
All righty. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that piece there. Talking about Chicago crime, as I was saying, if we can adjust this. Okay, as I was saying earlier into the show that I was a little bit emotional because two young children, if you're just joining us, two young children were shot in the head at different times in different parts of the city, from my understanding, from a gang crossfire. Right now, as I speak, those two young girls, children, are on life support, and their families have to make a decision, and we know what that decision is. It's a hard decision. Two young girls shot on the, I'm pretty sure the west side, south sides of the city. And it's sad. And unrelated to that is a 15-year-old girl. They're all African-American. A 15-year-old girl, 15, has been abducted. She's been kidnapped. And her family is just furious. And the police are saying that she is in danger. Okay? And it's heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking. And I'm pretty sure the police department, detectives or FBI, maybe they're all on this. But where were the police officers to stop this from happening and coming to the city of Chicago? Where were the police officers? Why weren't they patrolling, foot patrolling, using their cars to drive around these bad areas to stop some of this stuff? You know, you know what? I'm not blaming the police officers, but they're not. I mean, you cannot dismiss them because they're getting paid to do a job and it's not being done. I've heard so many times that the police officers just aren't proactive like they used to be. And the gangbangers know this. They know it. And that's why I believe this is why they have not taken over the city. Chicago is not being ran over by gangbangers and thugs. It's just in certain areas, certain pockets of the city. And I think that the police officers should just saturate these areas with police officers 24/7. And I think that would bring down some of the crime if they do not want the National Guard. I mean, saying the National Guard around some of these people in the city is like, you know, a bad taste in their mouth. They don't want that. You know, they don't want that. But if they don't want that, then saturate the city with police officers who have the experience to deal with gang violence. Do not put rookies over there, because the gangbangers, they know rookies. They can tell rookies apart from the veteran police officers. You have to put people over there with experience on bringing down these thugs. And right now, the shooters of these two young girls who are on life support, they have not been caught. So if these shooters have not been caught by the police department, these guys are out there to do it again. If you don't catch these guys, they're out to shoot and kill some more. Maybe a terrible way of putting it, but that's being blunt. And it's just heartbreaking to know that these two young girls are brain dead, as someone has said, brain dead, and on life support. you can only think of one thing that's going to happen. Once that life support is taken away, those two young children will be taken away. And the culprits are still out there shooting and killing. The police department, I don't know how lax they are. I don't know, you know, it's just that, you know, this is just too much. And the international people, the international leaders and other people from other parts of America, the states, are blaming the police department. They're blaming the mayor, you know, and the mayor is sticking it, blaming something else. You know, they're saying resources in the community and all of this kind of jobs and all this kind of thing. And I've said on a couple of shows back that the gangbangers, they don't want jobs. They don't want to work for anybody. They don't want resources. They want, if they want resources, the kind of resources that the gangbangers and the killers want, they want guns. They don't want no damn job. They want to get out here and kill, murder, steal, kidnap, and sex traffic young girls. This is what they want to do. You got to get in a community and flood that community and take these guys out. They are thugs, criminals. They don't want any job. That's why they go around stealing and burglarizing. They don't want a job. They don't want resources. They don't give a damn. They don't even want this stuff in the community, because thugs and gangbangers, they're like roaches. They like to hang around areas that are dilapidated, torn down. They like to hang around impoverished areas. You know, if you start building stores and putting high rises in the neighborhood, they're not going to like that, because that's going to drive them out. They're just going to look for another impoverished area to terrorize. I hear you when you say resources. You may be talking, they may be talking about resources in the community to stop the other young children from growing up and picking up a gun. I can see that. And I want to say that I do applaud a lot of the community leaders who are out there doing one hands-on mentoring to some of these young people who are possible, who could possibly, you know, pick up a gun and shoot someone and wind up in jail. I mean, I commend all those community leaders out there who are doing the right thing. But there are some out there who are just doing the right thing to get their faces on television, for publicity, you know, to be famous. And this is nothing. This is not about being famous. This is not about being getting your face on television or on a radio show. This is about saving Chicago. I mean, I don't know what the police officers are doing, but I do know that people around America and around the world, they're looking at the police department. They're looking at the mayor's department. They're not looking at putting resources in the neighborhood. They're saying, "Damn, you don't have a grip on your city. You're letting the criminals run wild." You know, one of the things that you are supposed to do as an elected leader is to protect the people of your city and of your state. They're looking at the hierarchy here. The police department, these people get paid very good money to serve and protect people of those communities, and it is not happening. It's not happening. Chicago makes the national news every damn night of the week. And that's terrible. That is terrible, terrible, terrible. All right, I want to say one thing, folks. Before the show is in, I'm going to talk about this tomorrow too also. I think it's totally pathetic that the Chicago Bears, the football team, they just got off a season where they won three games and they've lost 13. They've won 3 and lost 13. And because of this, they are raising their ticket prices for 2017. Ain't that a B? They're raising their ticket prices coming off a dismal season. The last 3 games at Soldier Field by the Bears, the attendance was very, very low. Hardly anybody sitting in those seats. These people, the owners, the management, these people, they have some gall to raise, to increase ticket prices for a dismal team, a team that cannot win, a team that's poorly coached, a team, a team that has, put it this way, a team that has no quarterback, at least no quarterback of Tom Brady stature or Aaron Rodgers stature. And these guys have raised the prices. Can you believe that? You know, I think the fans should just stay away from the games, even the exhibition games that's going to be coming up later on this year. Stay away from the games until the Bears prove that they can be winners. Just stay away from Soldier Field. Let them play. If you want to watch football, stay home and watch it on television. Do not go out to Soldier Field. You don't want to pay high prices to see a losing team. Increase prices to see a losing team is just totally pathetic. The Chicago Bears raised their tickets prices after a 3-13 dismal season. I guess they think that the Chicago Bear fans are idiots. This is a damn shame. If anything, they should be lowering the prices. They should be lowering it, not raising it. 3-13, that's an embarrassment. They are a national embarrassment. Why would you pay increased prices to go see a national embarrassment such as the Chicago Bears? It's crazy. It's happening. So I have a feeling that once the football season starts, the regular season starts, those stadium seats will still be empty because, you know, nobody's a damn fool. You know, I mean, this is what the Bears management and ownership is saying, that fans are a damn fool, so we're going to raise the prices. The Bears are a national embarrassment. 3-13. Give me a break.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Anyone who never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw.
Heaven help us, Lord, hear our call when we fall. the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you so much.
Now lay me down before I go to sleep. In a troubled world, I pray the Lord to keep hatred from the mighty and the mighty from the small.